Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BiteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, I have a very special guest. It's going to be a fun show. My guest is Joey Stuckey, born in Green Cove Springs, Florida. Joey is an award-winning blind guitarist, songwriter, singer, composer, producer, radio and TV personality, music columnist, educator, inspirational speaker, and sound engineer. Joey's guitar style is reminiscent of rocker Jeff Beck and jazzer Wes Montgomery, while his vocal influences range from Mel Torme to Greg Allman. These influences have inspired an original sound that he calls jazz-infused rock with Southern attitude. Joey is a student instructor for guitar, voice, music theory, and sound engineering, and is a professor of music technology at Mercer University. For more information, you can visit one of two of his websites, both of which are in the show description. One is www.joeystuckey.com, JoeyStuckey.com, and the other is shadowsoundstudio.com. And again, both of those are in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Joey to the show. Hello, Joey.
Hey, Robert. It's a pleasure to be with you, sir.
I am very happy to have you here. And like I told you just before the show, I just love your music. It is so much my style of music. I mean, I could just see myself kicking back, chilling, and listening to your music all day.
Oh, that's high praise. I appreciate that. That really means a lot to me. You know, it's fun when you create something that other people can really enjoy, so that means an awful lot. Thank you very much.
Well, you're very welcome. Well, you know, I usually like to start the show by having our guests give a little bit of a background of their journey and kind of what has led them to doing their work. And so if you wouldn't mind sharing with the listeners a little bit about your background and how it is that you became so involved with music.
Well, that's a great question. You know, it's a long story, and I'm a little verbose, but I'll do my best not to be too long-winded. As a child, as an infant, my mom realized that there was something that wasn't quite you know, right with my behavior as far as being able to navigate and move around, and so she kept taking me to the doctor. They kept saying, oh, he's fine. And then what they realized eventually was that I had a brain tumor and that I was, in fact, blind. And so the inspirational part, just even at this early stage of the story, is that they told my mom and my dad that the surgery was going to be very complicated. It was going to be difficult, that there was a high possibility of it not being successful, and that it was probably going to take 7 or 8 hours. And if they came out before that time, they should be prepared for the worst. They came out in about 3 hours. And, of course, my parents were just extremely concerned. And the doctor came over to me and said, I don't really know how to explain this except to tell you that a higher power had hold of my hands, and I just lifted the tumor out. And my whole life has really been, I think, you know, before I was really, conscious of it, you know, I think my life has been sort of marked from that point on. And I really do feel like I have a purpose and a mission, which we can get into later. But to talk about the music, my parents were both very involved in music. My mom sang in church. My dad had a country band as a kid. And music was always a huge part of our household and a part of our celebrations. And neither one of my parents ever did it professionally, and by that I just mean they never got paid for it. You know, it wasn't their career. It was just something they enjoyed. But I had a lot of different health issues as a result of the brain tumor. One year I got really sick with pneumonia when I was around 12, 13 years old, and I had to be homeschooled for about 4 months. And that is when the whole thing of producing and recording and all that stuff sort of came to fruition. I lived for Saturday nights when my local NPR station would play all these old-time radio shows. I don't know how many people are familiar with them, but, you know, the Lone Ranger, Superman, all that stuff started on radio before it was ever on television. And so they were playing all these old-time radio shows, and I was so inspired by them because the shows were perfect for a blind person because everything was told to you through the story of music or through the story of sound effects or through the story of dialogue. And I was like, man, I could do this. And so I was like, I need to do sound effects and stuff like that for TV and movie. And so I started at 13 sort of experimenting with all that stuff and actually befriended that DJ that played, you know, I've never met a stranger. And I befriended that DJ who played, his name is Rob Thomas, I'll never forget, and who played all those ancient radio shows. And he actually came over to visit me several times and taught me some of the things he knew about sound engineering and recording. And just really got me started. And then from there, you jump a couple years, and I moved to a different town, and I got my first job at 15 as the sound engineer for the local planetarium here in town in Macon, Georgia, which is where I've been living since I was 15 years old. So, and I got that job because of that same guy, Rob Thomas, recommended me to the museum. He knew someone there, and they were looking for a sound man. I said, you need to talk to this kid. He really knows his stuff. And so it went from there. And then from there, I started meeting all these people that were roughly my own age, you know, 18, 17 years old. And I started recording bands at my house. And then I was so inspired when I heard the first sort of garage band play their original music that all of a sudden I was like, whoa, this is music is my medium. That's really how I'm going to tell my story. And I have been doing it ever since and making a living doing it. I mean, I started getting paid when I was 15 years old, and I'm in my late 30s now. So I've been doing it a long time, and it's the love of my life besides my wife and my mom and dad. I mean, it's the most important thing to me. And I think the thing that I love most about music is that it is such a powerful tool for healing and for positivity. And I'll just share this one short story, and then I'll sort of have my little background sort of told, and you can talk again.
No, please. I prefer, you know, my guest talk.
When I was in my late 20s, I think it was maybe 28, something like that, I had a late issue from the brain tumor that was kind of a surprise, and I ended up in a wheelchair. Because I had something called a vascular necrosis, which made my right hip just crumble into dust. I was misdiagnosed for a year with bursitis. As we did research on the vascular necrosis, we discovered that people with my particular type of brain tumor did have a tendency to have that issue later in life. But I'd never known anything about it. None of my doctors ever mentioned the possibility, but, you know, it's just one of those things. And I literally woke up one day and just couldn't really walk anymore, and I was in terrible pain. Ended up in a wheelchair for about 7 months. But in that 7 months, I met my wife, and that was one of the best things that ever happened to me. And I certainly felt like I wasn't at my best, but it clearly didn't matter. We've been married 11 years now, and then the other thing about music that I wanted to share during that time was, I was in a lot of pain because, I mean, literally my bone was dying and crumbling into dust. And so, unfortunately, I have a system that doesn't really metabolize narcotics, which means that painkillers don't really work on me very well. And so I was just in terrible, terrible pain. And what I learned to do then, and I've always done it to a certain extent, but it became an art form really at that point, was I learned to play music. First thing in the morning was the hardest time because it was just so hard to get moving, and just, you know, I was in a lot of pain with my back and my hip and everything. And I would play music that I just loved, and I would get lost in it. And I would try to play music that was a little bit complicated, like maybe, you know, like from a jazz perspective, like John Coltrane or Sonny Rollins or Miles Davis, play some of the greats, some of the masters, and really get lost in the nuance of what they were doing. And once I did that, I found that I was able to get so inspired and shift my attention into the beauty and the amazing talent that these guys had that I just sort of forgot about hurting. And I was able to – I was still hurt, but I was able to shift my focus from that into the music. And once I spent that 20, 30 minutes in the morning kind of getting my mind prepared for the day through the inspiration of music, I was able to go on through the rest of my day and make it. And it's not that I didn't hurt, but just that I didn't allow it to control me or overwhelm me. My mind was focused in such a manner that wasn't possible anymore. So, you know, it's basically a meditation technique, really, if you at its essence. But I use, you know, instead of breathing or other, you know, other meditation techniques that people have used, I just use the amazing power of music, my love for it, the way it stirs my spirit, you know, the way it engages my mind. And I still use that today. There are days, you know, I don't really talk about it that much, but there are days that I still have issues and I don't feel well, you know, because I basically don't have an endocrine system that functions correctly. So there are days that are a little bit more challenging than others, and I still use that same technique of just engaging my mind. And then eventually I just sort of get so wrapped up in what I'm doing, I just kind of forget about hurting. So, my point is that music is this amazing, powerful tool for inspiration, for healing, for positivity, and to express pain as well. I mean, there are some times where we go through sad things in life, and I think one of the things about the human condition is that we kind of have this mindset on occasion where we start thinking, hey, we're alone and nobody can really understand what we're going through. And I think, well, yeah, maybe that's true to a certain extent. I mean, maybe I can't really understand exactly what you've gone through, but I can empathize. And I think the power of music, even sad songs, the power of those songs is to say there are other people that understand, you know, if not understand, at least can empathize with what you have gone through. And it's not, you're not alone. There are people that can comfort you and that can understand what you're going through. So even like the sad breakup songs and stuff like that, I think those are even powerful tools of healing as well. I mean, even though they are sad songs, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that, you know, being able to express and say, oh, you know, I don't like this situation. I think that's, you know, cathartic and helpful as well. So music has this amazing power for healing in all these different ways. Plus, it truly is an infinite, you know, what I like to think of as sort of the language of the angels. It's sort of the closest thing I think we'll know to the voice of God. And I say that in all sincerity, because it has no barriers. I mean, I can listen to French music, and even if I can't understand the lyrics, I can enjoy it. I can listen to Russian music. I don't know Russian. I can, you know, so there's nothing. There are no real boundaries that music can't cross. So anyway, that's the reason I love music so much, and the reason I devoted my life to it. And that's kind of in a nutshell. That's just what I love to do with my time.
Well, you are passionate about it. No, that's wonderful. That is wonderful. You know, I've really often felt and recognized, you know, the healing power of music, and it really, you know, like you say, it does transcend barriers. You know, any type of borders or barriers. And you talked about the sad songs and empathy. You know, quite often people, I think, are very grateful in many ways because it can sometimes spur a release of, you know, I mean, you know, if people really are kind of have some pent up sadness and they, you know, and maybe find it hard to cry or you know, to express it, you know, put on a sad song and it kind of gives them permission in a way of to be able to release that. And that in itself is very cathartic.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, if you know, the greeting card business makes a lot of money. And the reason it does is that sometimes people find it hard to say what's in their heart or what's on their mind. And so you're right. Exactly the point. I mean, with these songs, people will say, hey, that guy's singing my life story, or that girl's singing my life story. That's me. That's, you know, and that is a powerful tool. You know, one of the things that I think is really important is, and I talk about this, especially with people that have, you know, some health issues or things like that, or are blind or in wheelchairs or whatever. You know, I talk to them about, I say, you know, it's perfectly okay to say that I don't like being bound to this wheelchair, or I don't like the fact that I'm blind. I mean, that's okay. It's okay to say that, because if you liked it, I think that would be irrational. I mean, I think that would be just not healthy. So to say, I don't like this situation and I want it to change, is perfectly normal. It's even okay to be angry on occasion. What's not okay is to stay in that place of sorrow, to stay in that place of anger. So it's important to get a release, to express how you feel, and then to move on. And again, I think music can do that for you too.
Yeah, I agree. Now, in the introduction, I indicated that your music style is called jazz infused rock with a southern attitude, and I noticed also that you focus a lot on it. You call it the music of Georgia, the middle Georgia. How would you describe that?
Well, I'm in Macon, Georgia, and a lot of people. I'm very honored to be the official music ambassador of my town, and. This is a special, special place. We're just this little town, but from our town have come some of the greatest artists that have been around. We are the home of Little Richard. He was from Macon. Otis Redding from Macon. Allman Brothers, while they weren't from Macon, they lived in Macon and worked in Macon pretty much through the entire 70s, early 80s period. A lot of people, Johnny Jenkins is from this area. And so we have a real rich musical heritage, but we also have amazing talent. I can't tell you how many amazing people here in town. And so one of the things I do to sort of celebrate that and to sort of help spread the word, if you will, is I have a TV show on the local NBC station. It's called Studio 41, and I definitely encourage everybody to check it out if they want to see some really cool independent music. These are people from all over the great state of Georgia, from every different town and city, and it's every different genre is represented, because I love good music. I don't care what kind of style it is. I mean, if it's good, if it's done with heart, I'll listen to it. So that's one of the things I'm really passionate about. But this area is really known for southern rock and blues. So I think that southern attitude, I'm thinking of the Allman Brothers here in particular, and Otis Redding, with his very soulful approach. James Brown is also he's not from Macon, he's from Augusta, but he spent a lot of time in this area, and he's godfather of soul, so there's a lot of that flavor in this area, just amazing. And of course, another great Georgia artist, Trisha Yearwood on the countryside, I've had the honor of playing with her, and R.E.M., or live about 2 hours away. I've had the honor of recording some of those guys from that band. And so I just think that Southern attitude, is in that Southern sound is a real important, integral part of what I do. Even if it's not 100% coming from, I think if you were to sit down and really analyze what I'm doing, you'll see that even if I don't sound like those bands or anything like that, I think you'll see that there's definitely that sort of that sort of nugget or that sort of a core of the Southern sound at the center of what I do, even if it's not, even if my music's not like the Allman Brothers or whatever, I don't really play that exact style, but I think it informs kind of the things that I do. And I have to say, I'm a real chameleon. The biggest issue I have is I've got too many ideas. So sometimes it's difficult to settle down and pick something for me, because I have such a vivid imagination and a quick mind. And so, one of my sort of challenges is to have a cohesive sound that is marketable. And it's sad, but it's true. Much as I hate putting labels on music, you do have to have a sense of cohesion, and the reason you do is because you have to be able to say, who is it that wants to hear my music, and how can I make sure they find it? And that's when it kind of comes into the marketing standpoint. So I kind of don't, my biggest album, the one that's really garnered me the most acclaim is a record called Mixture, and it was number 9 on the top 40 CMJ jazz charts, up there with legendary jazz artists like Dinah Krall and Lee Ritenour, Marcus Miller, Chick Corea. We were competing with the big boys, and we're really excited by that. And so it's kind of the record that has gotten the most attention. And it's a fusion album, which is basically just it means multiple styles of jazz all kind of blended together. And it has a rock influence as well. But I also have some blues albums and, you know, some sort of alternative rock albums that I've done because I really am sort of a chameleon. And I just love music. Like I said, I play. And the thing that feeds me and allows me to be that chameleon and where that really becomes an asset is that I'm, as a record producer, I produce a lot of albums for different artists from multiple genres. And 9 times out of 10, I'll end up playing some instrument on their record to sort of, you know, augment their sound. So I might play piano, or I might play guitar, or I might play bass, or I might sing, or whatever. And so that's so much fun for me because it allows me to sort of satisfy that hunger I have for experiencing every different type of music that's out there. You know, whether it's reggae or rap or heavy metal or rock or jazz or bluegrass, I've had a chance as a record producer and a session musician to play all those different styles. And then that kind of allows me to settle down and focus on my music and make it a little bit more cohesive and not so, you know, hibbly-pibbly, because I have that chameleon-like, you know, ability, and it's hard not to express that. But the older I've gotten, the more I realize that, settle down, boy, you know. So that's kind of how it is.
Well, you know, and that is wonderful to be able to, you know, to step in to those situations and be able to contribute on different levels. And that's wonderful, you know, and you have so many different roles that you play, you know, from songwriter, singer to composer. I mean, I could see where it would probably be a challenge to try to, you know, rein them in. And I guess maybe they kind of probably go in cycles, no? Where maybe you would be, like if you're,
yeah, no, you're right,
producing
it's
someone.
You're really right. I mean, you're right. It's funny how things, they do kind of go in cycles. It's funny, like, sometimes I'll have, like, a lot of work as, you know, a producer. And then sometimes most of my work will be more as an educator. So it just kind of depends. And that's, you know, but I love it. It's amazing to me how important it is just to be who you are, and it's amazing to me how much the universe has accommodated my personality. Like, I've found my path that allows me to be all these different things that I want to be. And I, as they, you know, it's an old cliche, but they say variety is the spice of life, and I really feel that. I love new things. I love meeting new people. I love experiencing new ideas and new things and new places. And so I have been so blessed that my life just sort of worked itself out to where that's kind of what I do. I never get bored because I'm always doing something new. And I've always just, you know, I basically have, you know, I'm self-aware enough to realize that I have basically 2 speeds, which is full speed ahead and off. I've found the perfect, you know, career that allows me just to be who I am. I don't have to try and be something I'm not or try to conform to some other, you know, somebody else's idea of what I should be. I'm able to do exactly what I'm inspired to do, and I think that's the most important thing you can ever do. I think the only mistake you can ever make in life is not to follow what you're passionate about. I really feel that's the only thing, you know, and it's like, when I do my talks, I tell people, like, look, if you've got something in your heart that you want to do and you're not doing it, that's the only mistake you've ever made in your life. And, yeah, you know, follow it. And no matter what happens, I believe that you're successful. I mean, let's say you love baseball. Well, you may not play in the major leagues, but that doesn't mean you can't have a valuable, you know, impact, career, and enjoy what you do. And that's the thing. So, I mean, you know, that, you know, it doesn't matter what. As long as you follow your heart, I believe you'll be rewarded for that effort. I really do. And I take special pride in helping people that are new to the business, who don't have the experience and the education and all that I have, that I can sit down and help them get to, you know, a new level, and help them get somewhere without, you know, without breaking the bank, and give them a product, whether it's recording or producing or education, that allows them to move forward in their career in a way they wouldn't have been able to do, you know, before. And that's really exciting to sit down and take. And the other thing that makes me so happy, you know, there's when you hire someone like me to help you produce your album or your song or to give you voice lessons or something like that, that's a real privilege, and it's a real honor, because those people are having to trust you with something that is so personal to who they are, which is music. Music is such, it is impossible to express music without speaking of the spiritual component. And so music is so highly personal and so highly unique and special to the individual, I think. That's a real honor to be trusted so much for someone to let you in to tamper with, you know, the stuff that comes from their spirit. And that's, you know, that's what I do. I never try as a producer or anything else, I never try to force someone to sound like somebody they're not. Like, I don't think that every girl that comes into my studio should sing like Katy Perry or whoever you want to name your favorite artist. So, I mean, you know, I don't think every guy needs to sound like, Jason Aldean or whoever, you know, whoever you like in music. You know, so I never try to force them into a certain pattern or a certain mold. I try to help them be the best they can be. I feel like my job is just to figure out how best to communicate their uniqueness. So anyway, yeah. I kind of got
that's
off on a
great
tangent there, but
that's fine. No,
but,
no.
But it is fun. It's. I just love the idea that you can be who you are, and there are people that will value that uniqueness. That, you know, you're special. Everyone's special. I really believe that. I know it sounds cliche. It sounds kind of simple, but I really believe it. And I think that everyone can be inspired by everyone else. It's. You know, there's room for everyone in this business, in the music business, and whether or not you sell 10 million records or not doesn't really matter, because if I've reached one person and made a difference, I'm good with that. I can die a happy man with that knowledge. I really can.
I understand that. You know, we're kind of almost toward halfway through the show. I want to take and play one of your cuts.
Sure.
And then when we come back, I want to talk about it, because the one I want to play first is called Still Me, Sane and Free. And I am sure there is a story that goes with it. So I want to go ahead and play it. And then when we come back, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the song and what the inspiration was for it. Okay.
I'll do it.
Great. Okay, everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back again. This is called Still Me, Sane and Free.
Without pain, nothing's real. So I am
Okay, that was I love that one. I'm sitting here with tapping my foot there, Joey, to it. It's a great song.
Oh, thank you so much. It's really one of my favorite songs, and I was really excited. I had an album that came out in 1999. And it was called, as I told you, I'm verbose. So my title of the album was Ironies, Pain, and the Light That Guides. And find it on iTunes, by the way, shameless plug. But I was so happy with that song. I wanted to get like that sort of lazy, hazy days of summer feel to it. And I had a full horn section on the actual album track. And it just turned out so nicely. And so we did a CD release concert at the historic Douglas Theater here in town, which is where Otis Redding and James Brown and a lot of those guys got their start. And we did it, and I had a friend of mine, Jimmy Hall, who was the singer and harmonica player and sax player for a band called Wet Willie. And they were huge in the 70s, early 80s, several gold records. Jimmy Hall has also played with Hank Williams Jr., a band called the Nighthawks. He's now fronting a band with Jeff Beck. So Jimmy's just an amazing talent, and he came down to be part of my show and play harmonica and sing some backup vocals. Just so talented, just an amazing guy. And so the track you just played was my band live the night of the CD release concert. So that's a live track, and I'll never forget, it was such a whirlwind that week that I was absolutely exhausted. I was like,
yeah.
All right, I got to go on stage and sing. I want to take a nap. But anyway, it was fantastic, and the band is so good. And I've always been so fortunate. I don't know how this happened, but I always find these amazing musicians that are willing to play with me. That was Stephen Floyd on drums, Miguel, not from Cuba Castro, on percussion. That was, again, Jimmy Hall on harmonica, backup vocals. I was guitar and lead vocal. Bird Wyatt on bass, and Elbert Gadsden on keys, and then a good friend of mine, Scott Turpin, on sax. So it was just a great group of friends and a lot of talent. And I love the song. I think, you know, the message of the song is pretty important. In the first verse, one of the lyrics is, without pain, nothing's real. And I think with the right sort of mental focus, you can realize that all experiences, whether they're good or bad, can shape you and be a positive thing. Now, that doesn't mean that I in any way like, oh boy, I hope something bad happens to me today. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, you know, if you allow all of your experiences to make you stronger, better, kinder, then at the end of the day, they've all benefited you. And so that's the first thing, you know, pain's something that can be used to your advantage. And then the second verse is, it talks about, you know, without sun, there's no rain. And that's kind of the idea of like, you know, we live in a dualistic, you know, universe where we have, you know, good and bad, you know, light and dark, all these different things. And it's actually that tug of war, you know, between the dualism of the you know, universe we exist in. It's that sort of tug of war that helps shape you into the person that you are. And every time a situation happens, you're presented with choices about how you're going to react and what you're going to do and how you're going to grow or if you're going to grow. And then the last verse is probably the most elemental and important idea. It says, without love, nothing's real. And that, of course, is, you know, that's the heart of the situation. But the chorus is, you know, I'm still me, sane and free, is the idea that no matter what happens to me, I'm going to stay true to what I believe at the core of my being, and I'm going to stay who I am. I'm not going to allow things to affect me negatively. I'm going to, you know, integrate them. I'm going to use them. I'm going to grow, but I'm not going to allow them to change me into somebody I wouldn't like being. And so that's the bottom line of the lyric there. And I just think that's crucial. Yeah. Oh, thank you very much. I mean, I that song means so much to me, and I get such a kick out of playing it live because it just is such a personal song for me. And the band really enjoys playing that song too. That's a song that everybody really enjoys, you know, enjoys jamming on. And it's got a nice sort of smooth groove. It's, you know, it's a lot of fun. So it's almost always in every set I play. I mean, it's every once in a while I don't get to play it for one reason or another, but for the most part, it's almost in every set I play. And I do a lot of I have several different incarnations in my band. I've got like a little trio, I have a quartet, I've got a duo. So we are able, and the reason is because, you know, everybody has a different budget and a different need, and some people don't want to pay, you know, the full price for the full band. I mean, you know,
right.
But that song works in like every configuration that I have, including, you know, just guitar and vocal. In fact, one of my favorite shows I've done in the last 4 or 5 years was this year when I was in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. I was up there at the University of Southern Mississippi for a week teaching and doing some classes and doing one of my inspirational talks. And I did a gig at this just little hole-in-the-wall bar called Nick's Ice House. And I can't tell you what a thrill it was to play that song there, because everybody that showed up was there because they love music. I mean, it was the most fun environment. You know, the place probably held, you know, 75 people, and it was packed. And I mean, everybody was just having a good time, singing along if they knew the songs. If they didn't know the songs, they were clinking their beer bottles in time and just having a party. And people were drinking, but nobody was drunk. Nobody was obnoxious. Nobody was out of hand. It was just a beautiful experience. And I played that song there with just me and the guitar. And it was just a blast. So anyway, I love playing that song and anytime I get a chance. And I'm glad you like it. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I do. I mean, like you said, you know, the message is wonderful, you know, and then it's just really got a kick. I mean, it's one of those songs that, you know, like I walk every morning, and this morning I was listening to your music as I was walking, and my step kind of picked up a little bit when that one was on. I thought, okay, that's cool.
Awesome.
You know, yeah.
Hey,
so
that's
great.
Well, you're a better man than I. I have a lovely treadmill that I should be walking on. As a blind person, I tend not to walk on the streets by myself if I can. Well, according to my wife, people in Georgia and also Tennessee, which is where she's from, don't know how to drive. So I steer clear of roads if I can help it.
Yeah. Well, I'm in South Carolina too.
That wants me to use it.
Yeah. Well, I'm in South Carolina. We have some of the same drivers here, so I think they cross the border here. So, you know, one of the things that I want to ask you one more question, then we'll move into another cut, because I really want the people to get a flavor of your music. And like I said, I just absolutely love it. With the music industry has just really changed a lot over the years. I mean, it's, you know, right now, I mean, you've got so, you between iTunes and downloads, I mean, you know, it's for you, how has the changed environment kind of changed your business or your business model or just kind of how you go about, you know, getting music out there?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, that's a killer question. It's a complicated question. You know, back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, even the 70s and early 80s, there were people looking for stars. They were out there looking for people that had amazing talent. And then they would take that talent and disseminate it, you know, to the masses. So basically what you had was a small group of people. There were really only, you know, six major record labels. There are other record labels too, but the six big ones. And you had sort of a very small group of people basically choosing for you what you got to listen to. So I'm just going to make this up, let's say there was a guy that was 10 times more talented than Michael Jackson. Now, I love Michael Jackson. I think he's a great singer. But let's just say there was a guy in New York that was 10 times more talented than Michael Jackson, but he hadn't been discovered. And so you don't have a choice between him and Michael Jackson. Your only choice is Michael Jackson or, you know, somebody, you know, well, let's just say Olivia Newton-John or something. I mean, you know, you don't, you know, there was a very limited number of albums released. there was a very limited number of things you could consume. So you had the sense of a very small group of people controlling your options. Well, in today's market, with the interconnectedness of all things and the web and downloads and smartphones and all this stuff, that is no longer the case. You have infinite choice. Problem
right.
is that there, and I don't mean this rudely, but there are some people who really, you know, their music really should never be heard ever. there are some people that...
I've heard some of it.
Who, well, I mean, uh-huh. and I'm not saying that they're bad people. I'm just saying that they haven't spent the time, the energy,
right.
the money, the education to become masters of their craft. And
right.
so if you want to go strum a guitar, by all means do so. If you want to play at the family reunion, that's great, no problem. I mean, I think that's wonderful. If it's a hobby for you, that's fine. But there's a lot of people that really have not made the music business their life's work that are out there. So the problem now is, yes, we have infinite choice, but there's like no really good filter to help you find the good stuff. And
mm-hmm.
and so there's it's sort of that sort of forest for the trees, you know, thing. And so that's the problem that we face now. Anybody with, you know, $300 worth of equipment and access to CD Baby or whatever can put their music online and you can go and buy it. So it becomes more difficult to find the kind of music that you want to see. I think what's happening now with on-demand content and a lot of people going to sort of smart playlists where they say, oh, you like so and so, you'll like these guys too. I think that's helpful. It is a little discouraging because it means there are some amazing talents out there that may once again fall through the cracks. But basically, take a look at one of my favorite bands, U2. You probably heard recently they gave away their album to everybody on iTunes.
Yep.
And there was actually a backlash with that. People saying, I don't want this free U2 album. Why did you put it in there? I didn't buy it, which just blows my mind. But anyway, there are people that didn't want the free U2 album. Why in the world would U2 give away their album for free when that's how they make their living? The reason is that they are finding that record sales at this point in time, and I use the old term record sales, downloads, whatever you
right.
want to call it.
right.
But they're finding that record sales are not the source of income they once were. And similarly, terrestrial radio, AM/FM, is also not the source of revenue that it once was. They're finding that now they're really able to make more money through merch, like T-shirts, DVDs as concerts, documentary DVDs or Blu-rays, and also the actual touring and concert, you know, getting people to come out to the shows is more important than selling the albums because they make a lot more money with the actual concerts. So
mm-hmm.
U2 decided, I'm not in a position to do this because I'm not as rich as Bono, you know, but they decided, we'll give away 5 million copies of our album. And, you know, because they're downloads, they really have no money in it. I mean, it's just a file, right? So it doesn't really cost
right.
them, it doesn't really cost them anything to give that away for free. So my point is, yes, the music industry is constantly changing. And I think it's going to continue to change and be a little, in flux, a little chaotic, I guess is the best way to think about it, for the next handful of years. I think it's starting to come back around to where people realize that, you know, one of the things the major record labels have kind of done in the past 15 years is they've been about short-term, you know, flash in the pan, a quick buck. And
mm-hmm.
and you haven't seen as many superstars or as many artists with long-term, you know, careers like you used to see. You know, there aren't as many Whitney Houstons, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
right.
there's not as many people like Elvis or the Beatles or, you know. So I think it's going to move back around hopefully to people understanding that you want to take the long view. You want to build a career that lasts and that means something, not only for the sake of music fans everywhere, but just from a financial perspective. And so I think it's continuing. But I think the big thing right now, and if anyone's a musician listening to this, I think the big thing right now actually beautifully ties into the whole thing that we've been talking about, that whole sense of being unique and that whole sense of being who you are. That is actually the key, in my opinion, to the new music model, because people are becoming more engaged with you and your story, and your music, I wouldn't say is secondary, but is another component of that. And they're getting a chance to know the artist because of the internet, because of the website, because of emails and all this kind of stuff, and YouTube videos. They're getting a chance to know the artist in a much more personal way, which is going to influence their, you know, whether they're going to shell out their hard-earned cash to buy your album. They're like, hey, I like this person. I identify with this person. This person inspires me. Let's go buy their record. But I think that's becoming more important than ever in the business.
Yeah.
So I'm always looking at what's going on and what's happening. I'm constantly evaluating how I can reach more fans, how I can both, you know, keep food on my table and be fruitful and financially, you know, secure with the idea of reaching more people and inspiring more people. So it's sort of a constant vigil that I keep on the business, and you know, it's ever evolving. But the long and the short of it is, to encapsulate, you basically have fewer filters now and more control feeded to the masses than used to be the case. That's a good thing. It's a bad thing. You know, you have, it's a little bit more difficult to find the quality of music that you want, but by the same token, you're not having some guy who lives in New York telling you what you want to hear in Macon, Georgia. So you have a little bit more freedom in that respect. There's less, you know, there's a lot more control over what you have access to. And then, of course, there's that whole thing, like I say, of, you know, I think the artist's story is going to become even more important than it ever was before.
I agree. Well, I want to play one more cut. What I want to do is, since we're down to about 11 minutes, I want to play the cut "We'll See." Then we'll chat for a few minutes, and then right toward the close, I want to go ahead and kind of close out with "Windows Down." It's a longer cut of almost 5 minutes, but we'll go ahead and I'll play that one kind of as our outgoing music, and then just do the closing there. But let's start first with playing "We'll See."
Sounds good.
Great. Okay, so that was We'll See. Well, Joey, that was another one that I just thought was fun. And when those voices came in, I was shocked. It was like, oh, my God. it was really great. I really enjoyed it.
I appreciate it. You know, that's a fun song, and I know we're almost out of time, so I just want to share a few quick special things about that song. One of the special things is that I co-wrote that song with my good friend and keyboard player in my band, Tom Rule, who's just a great guy. And we wrote the melody for the song, which is very typical in a jazz format. You write the melody, and then you open it up for improvisation. So all those licks and things and on the organ Tom was playing and I was playing on the guitar, which is all improvised. We just plugged in and played and said, okay, that's it. That's what, you know, we're done. We just sort of captured those spontaneous moments. And that's, I think, one of the reasons the song's so much fun. The drums there were also done by Miguel Castro, who's just phenomenal. But the voices, that section of the song, I had written something called a common tone exercise. I won't go into boring details about that. But it's a music theory exercise. It's a compositional exercise. And I'd written a common tone exercise for one of my students. And I said, hey, why don't we put this in the middle of the piece? I think it'd be kind of cool. And Tom said, and originally it was going to be on guitar. And then Tom said, hey, you know, I bet my wife could sing that. It was four-part harmony. He said, I bet we could get her in here and let her sing that, and that might be just a neat little piece of ear candy, just a neat little, you know, transition that wouldn't be expected. Good idea, let's do it. And we did. And she was just fantastic. Her name's Pam, and she's just amazing. And so that originally was a guitar exercise, but we transferred it to vocals, and it was very fun.
It was. I mean, I could tell, and it was great. I mean, it just reminded me of like the 50s or 60s. You know, would see the backup singers, you know, making gestures. I don't know. I mean, it just kind of.
No, you're right. But, you know,
it had great visuals.
I appreciate you for saying that because you know, the drum part there, if you go back and get a chance to listen to it, was sort of a ripoff of, sort of inspired, I guess would be a better word, of Gene Krupa on Sing, Sing, Sing. It kind of was that big band thing, and then we put that sort of 50s kind of doo-wop-y vocals on there, and it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, I could tell. So we're down to 5 minutes here. Before we close, I do want to let people know again at your website, joeystuckey.com, I noticed that you're on Facebook and on Twitter. So,
yes,
you know, for people who use those social media platforms, definitely join Joey there. I did send you my Facebook request, so I'm looking
awesome.
Forward to us connecting there and also on Twitter. So,
I want to take a moment to thank you for what you do. I sure appreciate you doing this show and being able to share people's stories and inspire others. That's thank you for doing that.
Oh, I appreciate it. To me, it's a lot of fun. I get to meet some really great people like you and all kinds of fun. So, you know, I mean, people I would never, you know, life would never have crossed our paths unless the show was there. So, I do want to thank you very much for your time, and I really look forward to following you on the social media and further interactions. You know, people, I have my guests feed into my Facebook page and Twitter, so you know I look forward to following you there.
Absolutely, we'll definitely stay in touch. And I just want to tell your fans if they want to see anything if they want to see something really crazy, they need to go to YouTube and type in Joey Stuckey Blind Man Driving, and watch me drive a four wheeler and almost wreck. So it's. if you really want to be entertained, that's
okay.
The way to do it.
Oh, gosh. Okay. All right. Well, great. That's great. And I really want to thank you for your time. And again, we're going to kind of close with the cut called Windows Down.
Awesome.
And it just made me kind of think about driving windows down and freeing the breeze. And that
That's
kind of thing.
The goal.
That's see about that? Boy, I tell you, you titled your cuts properly. I mean, they get the message across.
Thank you,
so
sir.
You're welcome. And I do want to remind everyone again, just a real quick note that I do have a real special guest coming on Friday. It is Rose Rock, the mother of Chris Rock, the comedian and actor. I met her at a local TV station when I did a promo for my book, Joy Potential. She's going to be on the show Friday. We're going to be talking about her book, which is called Mama Rocks Rules, and it's going to be a lot of fun, so I hope you'll tune in for that. So we're going to go ahead and close out again with Joey Stuckey's song, Windows Down. And everyone, I want to thank you again for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to BikeRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.me and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at BikeRadio.me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's BITERADIO.ME. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.